Wow, that was really beautiful. Wasn't that fabulous? Oh, when you guys do something together like that and surprise us, oh, that whole that when you started harmonizing on that back home thing, oh, that was so good. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community, and I'm really happy to be here, and there's some excitement in the air. Can you feel a little buzz in here today? I kind of woke up a little excited, you know, a little Twitter-pated, almost like it was spring again. And then it's so interesting to see it reflected here, and then to hear that the reading that you selected, Sue, was dynamite right out of my message, the song choices. I just love it when the whole day goes like that. Elza, just a part of the whole, we're putting you on the ecclesiastical staff, I think. I think we're going to have to do that because you're so fun to be around. So the title of my message this morning is Neighborology. Let me just do a little housekeeping here. That'll make me crazy. Okay, I'll better. Neighborology, isn't that a good word? I didn't make it up. I wished I did, because it's the kind of thing I'd like to be credited with. But the idea comes from another minister, a Baptist minister. I was reading a book he wrote, and he was talking about the way, sort of the golden rule and the idea of us all being in community. And I like to talk about a little bit about that every week anyhow, because that's what we're doing right now, is sitting together in community. And I found a quote from the founder of this teaching, the Science of Mind teaching, Dr. Ernest Holmes, that went so perfectly with what I want to speak to today, because I'm going to be talking about the flow of life. I'm going to be talking about the law of circulation and what it means to be a good neighbor, all of those things and more. So here are the words of Dr. Holmes. We should give of ourselves in love and in service to others, in a spirit of generosity and good fellowship. To refuse to give is to refuse to receive, for everything moves in circles. And so there's this great theme today, and all the quotes, all the things that I researched, I kept seeing this theme of circles, or the circuitous nature of life itself, and that way then that there's a connection. And so we're gonna look at that in a great way this morning. So if I wanted to be practical as an introduction to this idea of neighborology, you know, I'm rarely practical. It just occurred to me how funny that statement was, if you knew me. But if we want to tie it in easily right now, I would say, I would ask this question: what does it mean to connect as neighbors, but in an expanded way, on this planet? So I want us to think really big today, looking at neighborology as a bigger context. What does it mean to be a good neighbor? And I would say, in answer to that question, it's easy to say, what does it take to be a good neighbor? Well, of course, practicing kindness, practicing appreciation for each other, giving some openness to acceptance of the way we're different from each other, noticing where we go into judgments. And of course, we would talk about giving and receiving, because that's directly where we go when we look at spiritual principle. So as I went back to Ernest Holmes, I found this quote where he said, "We should not expect the law of good to operate for us alone. It is only when we share with others that good is really ours." So it sort of reminds me of that idea of how when we share it, we grow it. It multiplies, just like the passing of the loaves and the bread and the fishes, that it multiplies as we share it. It becomes more. So you have to know, if you're me, if you know me, you have to know that I've been singing. You know, it seems like every Sunday message comes with a song. I don't always tell you, because sometimes it's really not appropriate. But today, or this week, all week long, I found myself going around singing, "It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Won't you be mine? Won't you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Thank you. You know, you should never let me sing alone. Because you know I'm going to sing anyhow. I can't help it. Something happens and I'm watching you harmonize going, man, how do you know what's going to come out? Because that's for me. I never know what it's going to sound like before it comes out. Do you hear it before it comes? Oh, she says, oh, yeah, of course, like it's just another day. So I want to talk to you about Mr. Rogers. There's a movie coming out, did you know? Tom Hanks, and I guess the trailers are starting to show up in the movie theaters now. They're just starting to see the previews for it. But there's also that great documentary. I saw, Hugh and I watched it a couple months ago on Netflix or something. A great documentary of his life. And I was really impressed with what it was like to go back and see a peek of Mr. Fred Rogers' life and kind of behind the scenes, what goes on behind the scenes or what went on, and to understand his brilliance in a way that I never appreciated as a young mother. So my children grew up with Mr. Rogers. He made me a little antsy because he talked too slow. But he's this gentle, gorgeous soul. You know, I think he was a Presbyterian minister, and his pulpit was his PBS. He got this TV show for children, and you know what his only goal was? To help children make sense of the world when it doesn't always make sense. And so Mr. Rogers, the TV show, began in 1968, and only a couple months after the show began, the assassination of Robert Kennedy occurred. And Mr. Rogers immediately created a puppet, a little episode with the puppet, I can't remember which, probably the tiger, but and Lady, what was her name, Alberine, Lady, I wrote it down. Aberlin, that's right, Lady Aberlin. And so the puppet is a child, and Lady Aberlin is a human talking with the puppet, so it's like an adult having a conversation with a child, and they're laughing and having fun, and then in the middle of the conversation, the puppet child says, Lady Aberlin, what is assassination? And you can just watch her face change, and her whole body countenance slipped into this sad, serious way of being. And she tenderly said, oh, I bet you've been hearing that word a lot lately, haven't you? And they moved into a discussion where it was really addressed. Because, see, Mr. Rogers wrote all the music and the scripts for that show, and he understood that these were difficult things for parents to talk about with their kids. And what's also interesting is a lot of what he did was not just for the children, but it was to teach the parents how to show up with their kids, how to talk about those things with their kids. So after 9/11, he immediately created a special that aired. It was for parents and children. And in that special, he said this, I know how tough it is these days to have hope and confidence in the months and the years ahead. But you know what my mother used to always tell me? My mother would say, when something goes wrong, look for the helpers. Isn't that good advice? When something goes wrong, look for the helpers. Look for those who stand up and begin going to work right away to aid in whatever way they're needed. And I think it's just such a beautiful idea and such a great wisdom. And you can see that he grew up in that kind of family where that kind of wisdom was shared on a regular basis. And so he had this instinct that people, especially little people, children, could learn about love, and they could learn that they are lovable, and they could learn that they make a difference simply by bringing joy and laughter into the world, and that's what he dedicated his life to. And so to be a good neighbor is to share, and I think he was a good neighbor. In fact, so much of what I read and learned about Mr. Rogers this week paralleled the life of Jesus in a very subtle way. which helped me remember that that's the whole point of why we are here, and that is why we have this example of this exemplary life that was given to us to see that there's another way to show up. And that's those are some of the things that I want to talk about this morning. A neighbor is the synonyms for the word neighbor rather than the definition. The synonyms include nearest, closest, next to, bordering or connecting. And I think when I think of bordering, I think of how bordering, if you see a borderline between between Peoria and Glendale, you don't really see a line. They're next to each other, but you can see that they're connected. And that's the important thing to get from this idea. Right now, each of you has a neighbor. A neighbor to your left and a neighbor to your right. Some of you left a little space between one of those neighbors, right? Because we're in choice. We get to choose and develop the level of intimacy we are willing to express. And there's nothing wrong with that. We all have a different consciousness of space. And some of you aren't sitting alone because you decided to. It's just that that's where the way it ended up, when everybody finally sat down after all that fun talking that we were doing, clogging the aisles and all of that. You also have a neighbor before you, in front of you, and behind you. And so in this way, we can begin to see that what feels like separation doesn't have to be truly separation. So I'm looking at the chairs, and the chairs seem to touch each other, but they're separate. But they make a row when we put them all together. And I'm looking, and I see that we all have bodies. It's wonderful that we do. Well, actually, there may be disembodied entities here in the room also. I don't know. but what I can see with my physical eye is that we have bodies. And I think that sometimes because we inhabit a human body that's materially, physically made of substance, bone and blood and flesh, that we feel more separate from each other. So it is kind of something that almost keeps us from experiencing oneness, but it tells us that that experience of connection happens beyond the physical. Well, that's something to think about. And so where there's a space between Sue and between Jane, you might say it's a little border, but they are still connected. And we begin to understand in some way that though we are individuals sitting in this room, we make up a single community. And that's the way life is. We're talking again about this idea of wholes, W-H-O-L-E-S, that we keep bringing up in the last couple weeks. So what is it like to be... I mean, think about it for a minute. Don't answer out loud, but think for a minute. Do you have good neighbors at your home? Think of your neighbors. Don't nod your head or give it away. Do you have good neighbors or not good neighbors? Well, you know, I mean, the reason I don't want you to give it away is because the spiritual response to that is that to have a good neighbor, you have to be a good neighbor. Right? You want friends, you have to be a friend. You want love, you have to be loving. You have to be it. And that's why probably nobody in this room, but we all know somebody who never has good neighbors and has moved again and again and again, and always there's awful neighbors next door to wherever they choose to move in. I certainly know people like that in my life. And at some point, you kind of snicker. But the real growth comes when we're willing to look at our own experience. So look at your own experience. You know, think about that. This is something you can take home this week, because I want you to, and Sue was reading about it in that topic of flow. I want us to really step into understanding, or at least contemplating, what it means to be it. Emma says, as if we all know Emma on a first name basis. Emma Curtis Hopkins, the great Christian mystic from the 1800s. Emma suggests that what you describe is what you become. What you describe is what you become. When you see something happen in your neighborhood or in the world, and you talk about it and describe it, you are becoming it. So what are we noticing? Because what you are noticing is what you are then being. It becomes a vibrational experience in our very being. I think in its simplest form, we could say that complaining, this is so good, complaining stops the flow of good in our life. I mean, think about it. If you are complaining about anything, you are not having an experience of good. There's not much good about it. And so limitation of any kind happens when we are invested in negativity, whether it's something we're thinking about, speaking about, watching TV on, it's that's then stirring up our being, and you may be missing out on some of your goodness. Now, your goodness is still there. Remember, we say this, well, I try and say this every week in one way or another, but there is this gorgeous natural flow of life, and I think that the art of living, is something to ponder. I think that the art of living is finding our place in that natural flow of life. So there's giving and receiving. There's a way that we can move in the divine current of life. And that's what spiritual practice is all about. That's why we come sit on a Sunday morning and talk about spiritual principle, because the law of circulation, again, thinking about those circles, how things are always going round and round, it's working all the time. Holmes says, everything that goes out comes back again. Everything that goes out comes back again. Even our thoughts move in circles, he says. So it's like the seasons. It's like the hours on a clock. It's like the orbits of the planets. It's the way the moon knows how to move around the earth. It's like the migration patterns of the birds and the whales and some insects. Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson, wrote an essay called Circles. And it's always been one of my favorite essays. It's one of the shorter essays. And Emerson said in that essay that we are all discerners of spirit. We are all discerners of spirit. And so when we discern that movement of time, of the seasons, of the orbits, of the migration patterns, we discern those cyclic patterns that are just the very nature of life, then we can begin to see the spiritual wisdom in all of it. Because there's no place where God is not. There's no place where the infinite intelligence is lacking or limited. So in the words of Emerson, he said, the natural world may be conceived of as a system of concentric circles. And now and then, we detect the surface on which we now stand is not fixed. He actually used the word, it's a little slippery. And so as we become discerning in our spiritual wisdom, we become more sensitive to the natural movement of life. We begin to see that all of life is expanding and then contracting. And so what feels like it's a closure is just a part of the process. It's like the way the lungs expand and contract to breathe. So at worst, it's two steps forward and a step backward, but it's two steps forward. So you're always making progress, even when it appears you're not. Even when it appears you're going through something difficult that is holding you back, when it feels like life's against you, because life is never, ever against you. That is a perception, to believe that it is. And so the message this morning is that it matters where you place yourself in relationship to everything else. It makes a difference. It matters where you stand, how you posture yourself with the rest of life. And it matters how you relate to the person sitting next to you this morning. In a chair, It matters how you relate to the people next door to you at your home, and it matters how you think about your neighbors that live on the other side of the globe that you've never even met. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's all this. It's all one. It's all the same thing. You know, they say Jesus was convivial. I love that word, convivial. I did a talk on it in another lifetime. To be convivial is to be fresh and original and fond of social pleasures. I think I'm kind of convivial. I really like the social pleasures in life. We had some fun here yesterday. And I think when we think about Jesus as having that spirit of conviviality, I think that, see, sometimes I think we miss the point that we think Jesus came to give us another set of rules. And we have to remember that Jesus did not come and do all this incredible work to start a new religion. He was Jewish. He was a Jew. He was a rabbi. He understood the human relationship in the poise of a religious person, you might say. But he came as an example. Let us always remember that he came as this tremendous example to help us reimagine how to be together. The golden rule. You know, I mean, Mr. Rogers, I think, lived the golden rule. And so the Old Testament, you know, you've got all the law stuff that Moses was helping the people to stay alive. And then Jesus comes, and now we have a new message. We have love. We have the golden rule. Love your neighbor. Love God, but love your neighbor. That's how you love God. We do that through our appreciation of each other, the way that we're willing to see the divinity in each other. We call that more forward when we're able to do that. So there you go, New Testament, Old Testament, love and law. And we use both. We didn't throw out the Old Testament when we embraced the Gospels, right? So our thought, this is a quote from Holmes also, our thought has creative power, and since it has this power, we must carefully choose what we think. Because everything moves in circles. Everything moves in circles, so carefully choose what you think. I love that word choose shows up. Choose, choose. If it doesn't work out, choose again. You get as many do-overs as you need. They're free, sort of. I mean, there is cause and effect. There is a consequence to the choices we make. We do, as they biblically say, we reap what we sow. As you believe, it is done to you. Go into science. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction or something like that. I didn't look it up. I'm just talking now. I don't know what I'm doing. But you're listening, apparently. So we're talking about the law of circulation. We're talking about giving and receiving in a slightly different way than we usually do. And I think that the example of Jesus, the words in the gospel, the golden rule, is about love and relationship, not rules and platitudes. And I like to remind us of that. You know, all that guilt and shame stuff, that didn't come from, that wasn't part of the message. That's human imposed. The message was about the force of love. So it's an opportunity for us to rearrange our ideas about what it means to be neighborly, to have relationships, and to look at the way that we relate to life itself. We are currently, right now, August, what is it, 11? 12? 11. Hugh's birthday's on Tuesday. I should remember this. I love you, honey. Okay. When he doesn't say I love you back, it's worrisome, isn't it? Go right to the naughty place. Right now, today, even as we sit in this air-conditioned sanctuary in the middle of the desert, there's stuff going on in the world. And so we know that more than ever before, it's important for us to reimagine our human connection worldwide. Okay, now that seems a little difficult some days recently. But I think that it's really simple if we can examine the example of Jesus as the Christ consciousness, which we all have that same equal amount of Christ consciousness. It's up to us as to how much we expand our own consciousness to embody that idea of the Christ consciousness, that example that Jesus gave us in his living. So we are expanding globally. Some of us don't want to. Some of us don't like what we're reading on the news, in the news, or hearing on the TV. But we are expanding. With or without our help, the world seems to be doing this. But I want to say to you, if I go back to the illustration of Mr. Rogers at the top, you can see that there are ways we are being called in a bigger way. Something in the universe is calling all of us, each and every one of us, to respect differences, to be more open, to learn, to be curious about things that look different than the way we're used to always doing it. I mean, don't you just notice that when you go have dinner at somebody else's house and they don't cook quite like you do? You know, I thought Sue Witter had a hot plate, and then she explained to me something I didn't realize, that it was really, you know, a lot of smart people are using, what do you call them? Induction cooking, and it's genius, and I'm thinking, oh, she's behind the times. I had a hot plate once in Asia in 1995 because we couldn't have a stove. We had a hot plate, and I had to cook on it. So you don't know, and you don't know what you don't know. So we're being invited, I think, to consider new ways. And then, even as we leave, maybe even uplifted and inspired a little bit on a Sunday morning or after a class or a conversation circle, and we're feeling pretty good about our life, then suddenly, bam, we're confronted with something that's not so comfortable. Maybe there's a challenge in your personal life. Maybe a family member is going through a challenge, or maybe the world is just challenging us in this big, giant way. And suddenly, you have witnessed some kind of an evil act, or what I would call, biblically speaking, demonic violence, because I think we have witnessed demonic violence in the last couple of weeks. What do we do? How do we get ourselves back on track? And I think that this person, Jesus, showed us that there are easy things we can do. You know what he did? He'd become a healer. He's standing in the middle of something that has an appearance of a demon that needs to be casted out. He would become a healer. He would look beyond the appearance. He would call on the name of good. He would become a therapeutic presence. And so can we. So can we. We can call on that name of good. We can align ourselves to the divine. We can be, if we so choose, but you have to be conscious. You can't be carried away by the fear and the ugliness that's unfolding in the world some days. You stand in that place of godliness, which is your goodness, and you become that therapeutic presence. And that is the way that we cast out demons. And then, like the mother of Mr. Rogers, we can expect to see the helpers. Look for the helpers. I have done that for years. Nobody told me. My little soul is so hurt after a tsunami or a devastating war somewhere. The shootings, my little heart, my soul feels the pain of that, and it's so hard. I so want to look away and pretend that it didn't happen. But that gorgeous Buddhist practice of Tonglin teaches us that you can breathe that in. You can breathe that in, and your pain turns to compassion. And when you exhale, your compassion and your love becomes a powerful force that is soothing to others. So we look for good, and we expect to see it no matter how devastating things appear, or no matter how much your heart is broken over this or that or something else. It's finding our place in the flow of life. You cannot stop the flow of life. Well, you can. You could put a tourniquet around your arm and stop the flow of blood in moving through your body, and then what would happen to your arm if you didn't remove the tourniquet? Eventually, there is no flow. There would be decay, and then there would be death, right? We have to have that flow, but it is up to us to make that step out of our fear, that step in our mind away from that negative thinking, those worrisome thoughts, and that step into that gorgeous way of disconnecting that tourniquet. Because here's what we do. We don't realize that negative thoughts are tourniquets that are stopping us, stifling us, cutting off the flow of good in our awareness. It's not that that good isn't flowing all around us all the time, because it is. It is a God-given grace that is always the Father's good pleasure for us to have that opportunity to be the vessel, to be open to that grace. Creative life is always flowing through us, and negativity blocks it. That creative life force, where every idea came from, we were once an idea. Yes. And everything comes from that creative life force, and it is flowing through us. And so our job is to keep it flowing. Our job is to use our gifts. Our job is to stand and remember when we're feeling challenged that right where we are, God is. Therefore, right where I am, peace is. Right where I am is all the strength I need to help me move through whatever it is. Right where I am is the breath of God, all the inspiration to uplift me. Right where I am is the fullness of joy, is the perfect order of the entire universe, and all I have to do is notice it, to be conscious of it, to be open and willing to have that experience of that creative force moving through me and expressing as me. It is the desire of spirit itself that we do that. In fact, I would say it is a mandate. If we are not doing that, we are stuck with a tourniquet somewhere blocking our good. And only we ourselves can remove the tourniquet. Life will go on with or without our individual willingness to progress. Because, see, life always goes forward. Life always goes upward and forward. And Holmes called it in ascending circles, a spiral, an upward spiral. And there's always more good tomorrow than available to us than there is today. That is, there is more good if you are willing to bring in good, to stretch your consciousness to be able to have more good. And then when you wake up the next day, you have the opportunity to stretch it even more. And so we're all on this journey of choosing how much good we can stand, you might say. Neighborology invites us to keep things flowing. And then what happens is it grows beyond our personal experience, and we begin to see that we are in this great big world. We see it in a larger context. We begin to see that we're a piece of something magnificent, that you are one in a sanctuary right now of many, right? And that we are a community, a centers for spiritual living. We are a science of mind community, but we are one in the center of many. And that all religions are one in the center. There's this great truth, and there are many. And so we get to see that there's more and more and more in a larger context. The World Wide Web, the internet, has given us the best illustration of what a web of life is like. How I respond to whatever I'm going through in any given moment creates a vibration that goes out on the entire net, the web. You know, you hit a spider web with a hose, wet it, and watch how that web vibrates. We are all a part of something so much greater. We're living in this new world already. It is the information age, we call it. So what do you spend your time becoming informed about? How are you choosing to be? How are you energetically vibrating in your own piece of the web of life? And so, my friends, I would say that we can come together and we can be uplifted and we can be big for God by remembering we're blessed and we're inspired and that our gratitude increases that good. We can honor life. We can serve life. We can serve each other. And if we meet a challenge, or if for any reason you are disheartened, even for a short while, remember this. When challenge comes, it comes to activate a potential. When challenge comes, it comes to activate something else that is possible, something else that is waiting to emerge, and it can only emerge through us one person at a time. So let us be open to the wisdom. Let us be open to the grace of God. And in the words of Mr. Rogers, I just thank you for bringing your love and joy to the world. Now let's anchor these ideas in the words of prayer. I would ask at this time that the practitioners and the ministers, if you would just stand and surround this room, please. We will take our consciousness and move deeply. Into that sacred space. To the secret place of the Most High within. And so as we breathe, we simply allow all the words spoken this morning to fall about this room, knowing that there is a perfect gem for each one of us, because indeed we are a part of the whole. And so as we pause, we realize that right here in this very room is the fullness of God itself. I feel that love of God within me, and I feel it as a magnificent force, the activity of life, that circular movement that goes around. There's an in and an out, a recognition that the inner God and the outer God is one God. I see and recognize and sense and know that that force of love is at the core of each individual being sitting in a chair this morning, right here in this room, that we are neighbors in a holy neighborhood. That we come together because we know how to stand for truth, that we desire and feel that urge for an experience of realization, of sacredness, of connection, of divine communion with each other and with God. I feel the love of God, and I know it is that quickening, that inward movement that allows us to see that indeed we are that the healers. We do bring that therapeutic presence everywhere we go as we align ourselves to the mind of God. And so we gather together today to recognize that oneness, that power, that presence. To claim it and own it and allow it to be revealed and expressed through us. We stand here this day knowing that it is our divine mandation that we allow the presence of God to express in our lives, for that joy to be on this planet, for that ability to stand for good and to express it, to see it, to expect it. And that quickening becomes the very energetic inside of us that is a healing agent It is a salve that soothes our discomfort. It is an energizer that heals us in a miraculous instant of knowing. It is that very gift of love that creates the safety of forgiveness in all of our relationships. And further, we know that not only is God right where we are, but that even in the lives of our loved ones, that there is no void, no absence, no separation, that God is right where they are too. And so this glorious healing process, even as we speak these words, as we feel that conviction in our being, that healing is a return to wholeness. And it spreads across this town, and it spreads across this nation and around this globe. The planet itself is benefited from our time that we speak these sacred words. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for these understandings, for the way we move in that perfect flow of our own life, that we say yes to the mandates of expressing our godliness, the divine qualities that we are innately given. I am grateful that we take time to be that therapeutic presence that we have been so named by the Creator. And so in this spirit of beautiful gratitude, feeling that movement, that inner movement, feeling it, sensing it, so grateful, I simply release the words of this prayer into that law, knowing it is already done. And together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen.